Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Sam Mitchell, after 329 games as a player, including a Brownlow medal, four premierships, one as captain, five best and fairest, three all Australians, just a host of awards that that young man got through his AFL career. These days, of course, coaching at the West Coast Eagles as an assistant, has a new book out called Relentless, and it's a perfect title for his career. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Sam.
Thank you for having me on, Daniel.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Relentless. Just tell me about the name of the book first. We speak to Glenn McFarlane a little bit on this program, who helped you with the book. Why Relentless?
We were tossing up a few names, and while we were working on the book, because I started working on it about 2012, but during that time, we were playing a game, and we were about 10 or 11 goals up, you know, 5 or 6 minutes to go, and I got an umpiring call that I didn't appreciate. I went to the umpire and told him my mind in a rather aggressive manner. And he's like, oh, look at the scoreboard. And he turned around to Luke Bruce and he said, oh, he's just relentless, isn't he? And he can just get off my back. And he told me the story and thought it was very funny. And we used it a little bit after that. And then it sort of stuck when we were reworking on the book and redoing parts. You sort of realised it was a recurring theme, so it seems to stick.
I know, Sam, I've spoken to you about this before, about and sort of ties in nicely with the title, around when you were just starting to make a name for yourself at Hawthorn and the training that you're doing, the extra training you were doing, and the sort of the role that Shane Crawford played in all of that. Can you just sort of share a little bit about that time where you were just dominating at VFL level and you were sort of thereabouts at Hawthorn there initially, and then it all started to happen for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I got drafted, Croft was, you know, he was massive at the time. He'd won the Brownlow a couple of years before, and I think he was doing his Hank Bolger thing on the Footy Show. a little flashback there for everyone, but he was just such a great player, and he just worked so hard. The story that I hear is that he sort of took professionalism of the whole sport to another level, and I was lucky to be at the club that he was at, and so when I got there, I realised, you know, he's number one, I'm number 44 on this playing list, so if I'm doing less than him, I'm never going to bridge that gap. So I needed to make sure I trained really, really hard, and so I just followed him around with this 2 years, and he had no idea who I was or what I was doing at those things for the first couple of years, but once I started to give him the ball a few times, he started to actually deliberately help me, which helped even more.
Smart play.
Yeah, and did... You've always had confidence in your own ability, and you're one of the best midfielders of all time, let alone just in recent times. But was there a moment when you thought, yep, I'm going to make it, because it did take you a little bit longer to be recognised than some of the other, you know, younger players coming through? Was there a game, a moment, or a season?
Not necessarily from an external point of view. From in my own head, there was. We played St Kilda, and I grew up a St Kilda supporter. And we played them. It might have only been my third or fourth game, and I was still, you know, getting 6 or 8 touches a game probably by that point. And the ball popped out from a centre bounce, and it was Robert Harvey and myself chasing the ball. And so I bumped him off the ball, off the line of the ball, and then picked up the ball, and then the sign went. And I threw the ball back to the umpire and turned around. That moment that I thought, I just bumped Rob Harvey off the ball and got the ball myself, so I beat him in a one-on-one in, you know, one moment. It was one of those things where I've been looking at this guy and how good he's been for 10 years, and then I didn't think that I was at Robert Harvey's level or anything like that, but it did give me that little bit of, oh, okay, I can do this.
It's interesting. Because I think there'll be a lot of people out there that wouldn't identify with players having little moments like that, Mitch, that signal to them that they are capable. And we often talk about the 50 to 70 game sort of milestone for players to feel like they're comfortable in their own AFL skin. But little moments can make a massive difference, can't they?
Yeah, sometimes it's just, even just a small word, you know, someone saying something to you, or, you know, telling you that they think that you're going to be strong enough is all it takes. And I was probably prone to being overconfident rather than underconfident. So I didn't have too much trouble. Once I got into the system, there's always something to work on, something to do, and I was sort of more focused on that. I never there's a section of the book where I talk about never really being too focused on the big picture of the whole career. It's always what's the most important thing to do right now rather than the big picture. And that, although it was probably a strength, it was also a weakness of my makeup during my career.
What I was considering that in the build-up to this interview, thinking about you last night, thought, I've known you for a long time. You've always been a very strong personality and you've been your own man. And I was wondering why that probably was. And I came to the conclusion that it was probably what you said before, that you had to fight so hard and probably a lot of people didn't show a lot of faith and belief in you, that you had to do it yourself. Is that about right?
Sometimes my wife will say that that's what I use to justify being rude and short. But it does make sense. So when people are telling you things that you don't want to hear, you've got a couple of options, I guess. You can listen to it and try to, if it's constructive, try and improve on it and try and get it better. Or the other thing you can do is just say that's not right and just continue to do what you think is the best thing. And there's a few examples of that. I mean, if I listened to my coaches throughout my career, I never would have kicked on both feet. So you have to know when to listen and when to say, no, I know what I'm doing and I'm fully committed to what I'm doing. I'm not half... I'm not half in, half out. I know what I'm trying to do here and I know what I need to achieve and I think I've got a good roadmap for doing it. And then do the best you can in that area and just got to back yourself in. Because then at least if you go down, you go down doing it your own way and you can say, well, I had a cracker at my time, and rather than trying to do what someone else thought when I always had that feeling that it wasn't right.
I want to flip it around. I've asked Sam the question about a moment or a time where he thought he would make it as a teammate of his. What was it? Was there anything that stands out for you that you thought, oh, this guy is going to become the player he ultimately became?
Oh, for me, it wasn't a game. It was his training. And you talked about it before, the way he worked with Shane Crawford. But you saw him emerge as this kid that was just sort of floating around to this beast that was pushing himself to absolutely every nth degree of capability. That's it. And I thought, well, he'll make it. There's no doubt about that. No, I didn't know he's going to be a 329-game superstar Brownlow medalist, but he always knew that he would go down swinging, and that was always a great hallmark and character trait of Sam from the moment, from that probably about a year in, Mitch, when you sort of found your feet at the club land, just living the club life, I suppose. Was that about the time it happened?
Yeah, I think I always trained a lot, and too much probably, when I was younger. I don't know if you would remember it, but when I was playing only at Box Hill and I wasn't on horse, I just used to come down all the time and, I was still going through uni and school and those things and trying to come in, on the day off, and I'd come in and we used to train at the MCG and I'd always just stay there and just be fascinated with what was going on. And then I'd train during the day and then that night I'd go and, have a run around at Box Hill as well. So always getting a bit of extra training in. So I always trained really hard. I just got a bit better at it, and I wasn't breaking up the drills by being terrible at it as the time went. So I always trained really hard, and that was how I sort of got the foot in the door in the first place. And I think once I got in and I had a bit more idea, I grew up in a family that wasn't athletically minded or anything like that. So once I got into the system and I had a year of professional help around me, then I think I got a bit fitter and body shape changed a fair bit, and then I started to probably keep up with other guys in different areas.
Tell us about your relationship with Alistair Clarkson. We've learned a little bit through the last month or so in bits and pieces of the book. What was it like his first year? What was your relationship like really early with Alistair?
Well, I was fortunate that I was the age that I was. I guess he came into the footy club with a pretty strong idea and a strong vision of what needed to happen for Hawthorn to win a premiership, and that was to rebuild, get youth, get a whole bunch of young guys who really weren't ready, force 50 or 60 games into them, and then we've got enough middle talent at that point, middle-aged, which was myself and Luke Hodge and Campbell Brown and Rick Ladson and these guys. There was enough of those guys around, and then there was a little bit of the older talent with the Shane Crawford and Trent Crowe and these guys. So with all of that mix that he had, the guys that he really invested a huge amount of time and effort into was myself and Hodgie and that age group. And because of that, the amount of progress that we made so quickly because of the resources and the time and effort that was put into us, I was really fortunate to be that age, because if I was 5 years older, I would have been the blokes that were getting walked out. And if I was a couple of years younger, I would have just been getting carried along. So the age that I was really fortunate. from a personal point of view, and what it did was it just gave us this huge amount of faith that we're going to make it, because there was never any doubt from his mind that we would, and that I think solidified our position as key players in the team. And then from there, we just listened to everything he said, and we didn't matter how silly or how crazy it sounded, we just backed it in and we just did it, because it was better than what we'd done before, and it was giving us more success in the long term that we could see.
Brendan Goddard joins us from the Bombers. They're hanging on to finals ambitions still, and he's hanging on to his knee at the moment. Brendan, good morning to you.
Hanging on to my knee, hanging on to my hair, hanging on to life, hanging on to my career.
Just put your crutches up against the wall, that's fine.
Now, Brendan, you come in here walking okay. Surely you're not playing this week. I am,
Daniel.
I had cremated you at halftime last Friday night. You were dead. You were never going to play again from what I saw, and all of a sudden you're playing this week. What the hell's happened?
I'm a fast healer, but I escaped anything serious or anything of serious nature. Structurally, all good. So barring a bit of pain from the bone bruising and the swelling, which I had post-game, but managed to get all of it out. Pretty much.
Nice.
But we left it as long as we could. I trained yesterday and do a bit today, but left it as long as we could just so it would recover and heal. So, yeah, all good to go.
When it happened, what did you think?
Well, it hurt. So, but your thoughts go straight to an ACL, but then I having done one before, I knew that it wasn't the same. So
yeah.
I was pretty optimistic that it wasn't an ACL, but then... the only time I thought it was is when I misinterpreted our physio talking to our doc, and he said no, and then something else, and I was like, what? He goes, oh, no, meaning, no, it's all good. I was like, so that was the only time my heart skipped a beat, down in the race when they take you down and do the tests and everything. So, and then the doc couldn't rule out anything, or definitively rule out anything structurally, so that's the main reason I didn't come on, and then it was always going to be sore, but the... said that you'd probably be in a worse spot tomorrow if you went back on and didn't do anything else, but you'd be in a worse spot, which probably would have put me in real jeopardy of not getting up for this week.
What we saw on the coverage, I was watching on the TV at home, was you were using the screen on the bench with different camera angles and all that type of stuff as a reference point to perhaps whether or not you would go back out there. How long has that been on the bench?
Yeah,
that's been really cool.
Was it? That's more used by the doctor... One, yeah, to see injuries, and two, I think mainly around concussion. When a guy goes down, potentially a head knock, how long he stays down for, and there's different zooming options where they can zoom in, see head clashes, or whether he's concussed before he hit the ground, and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of detail now they can use, but yeah, mainly used for injuries. And I think we were mainly watching the Brown incident on Saad mostly, rather than my knees.
No, I must confess, I'm surprised that Stevo's not on the bench as a sort of scan expert, just sort of helping the doctors just sort of take us through what might be the case.
It was quite amusing for mine, because I don't think Doc Reg really knows how to use the screen.
BJ was on a lot of pointing and touching.
Yeah, well, because he's taking so long and he's so old. But one, he's not technically savvy, but then the old boy was just taking too long, so he was annoying me, so I was like, let me do it, and he's like, no, you press this, you press that, and we'll have an argument on the bench how to use it, and yeah, so we'll have a giggle.
So when you go down, because people that are watching on television, you see people go down the race and you sort of disappear. Take us through what happens.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah, well, it's all right for you. You play everywhere.
It's all right for you.
But you go down there, there's two corridors. You go left or right. There's a room where, an enclosed room where you'd, the doc would do some stitching or some jabs and stuff in any of your body parts. And then there's just a massage table in the hallway where you can use that to do some tests and away from the prying eyes of supporters and the media and cameras, so there's not much to it.
So when that happened, I know you said you were pretty confident that you hadn't done your ACL, but you're walking down that race, because I'm sure that Essendon fans would have been thinking, is this the end? Is this, you know, what's going on? So that's people watching it. What's going through your mind when you're walking down the race and getting your knee tested?
Well, we're just... I haven't done it very often, but we're just discussing the incident, what I'm feeling... what their thoughts are, what they saw. Doc had already watched it on the footage on that screen, so hence why he doesn't run out straight away. The physio, Dave Rundle, he ran out, and then Doc's sitting there analysing the footage to get his diagnosis kind of straight away. So then that's what we're discussing, that until we, you know, walking down the race and until we're sitting on the bench.
So is he saying to you now, Brendan, I don't think it is an ACL, but we've got to do all the tests? Or are they saying, I can't tell you anything here?
He's not giving you a definitive answer like that, but he's like, oh, I saw this and this is what happened, because sometimes I roughly knew what happened and how it felt, but Doc was just giving his diagnosis or his opinion on what he saw on the footage, and then I was giving him my feedback on how it was feeling.
And then that night, you're lying in bed and you know you're going to get scans the next day. Were you worried about, because obviously, you know, and we'll get to it all shortly, about your contract situation and where you are in your career. I mean, did you sleep okay, or were you worried about what was going to happen the next day?
I didn't sleep okay because I was up most of the night icing. But no, I was relatively confident after the diagnosis, the testing from Dave and Reedy, and my own feeling and experience with having an ACL before. So that's where he said he couldn't rule out any like a partially torn ACL, worst case scenario, or anything minor injuries to ligaments or any other major ligaments. But I was reasonably confident with how it was feeling. And then the next morning, there's a bit of swelling, but it wasn't that painful. Bit of pain at the front of my knee where the two bones clunked, where you get the bone bruising. I was reasonably confident.
So you're sitting on the bench for 3.5 quarters. What do you do?
Just talk to the boys.
Right, mate. That's good.
How does that go?
Went well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm more asking.
Constructive feedback. Yeah.
Correct.
So, I think I know your personality not too bad. Do you become a bench coach? Are you giving the younger guys advice? What are you trying to do there?
Because screaming at a few of the boys that are in my vicinity on the ground, talking to Harry Corrigan, who's the coach on the bench. So he had two coaches on the bench, and he was I was barracking at one stage. And Harry goes, oh, mate, he can't hear you. And I turned around and I said, no shit, mate. Like, I know that. But he's like, said it in a way that's like, it was quite funny. So we had a giggle. But, and then it was quite weird. Obviously, then Sardi come off, and then Raz at 3-quarter time, and then Hooksy 5 minutes into the last quarter. And so it's quite a weird feeling sitting there with four on the bench. A few guys ran to the interchange. Not sure they must have forgotten that we had no interchange, because it was brought up at quarter time. Three-quarter time, that we had no interchanges to make on-field rotations. If you're tired, go forward. So a couple of guys ran off, and we just did the no, you stay.
And then the drop of the head.
The drop of the head.
They get that flat when they work out they can't rotate.
So it was quite a weird situation to be in.
Well, we're all absolutely on the same page out of that meeting now with where we're heading in terms of our decision making. So that will play out in due course.
That was the coach of the Bombers, John Worsfold, the other day at 7:20. Well, no, that's where we are. That wasn't at 7:20 when he said that. But 7:20 on a Thursday morning, Brendan Goddard with us in the Inner Sanctum from the Bombers. Of course, they have got a huge clash on Friday night against the Tigers at the MCG to kick off round 22. But he was talking there, Brendan, about your career and your contract situation. On the same page out of that meeting, we're heading in terms of our decision making, so that will play out in due course. He went on to say, you don't need to know when that will be. We do. You're on the same page? Everyone's on the same page in terms of what your future holds?
Yeah, everyone is. Total transparency between the parties that need to know.
That's good. Are you happy with that?
Don't have a choice.
don't seem too happy with that.
No, I'm happy with that, yeah. It is what it is.
Righty, are you confident, more confident than ever, that you'll be able to go along next season?
I'm confident I can, yes.
Righto. Do you think that perhaps the club think that?
Yes.
Righto, this is good. We're making progress here. This is good. Bit by bit, Whitey, we're just getting there.
Do you feel
approach this from a different angle?
Yeah, Let's ask this question another way. No, not at all.
Do you feel, for the first time in your career, do you feel a little vulnerable where you sit at the moment?
No, I've felt vulnerable all year, to be honest. Yeah. I think I discussed a couple of weeks ago just about preparing myself for this situation, have done all year when I think late in the preseason, so early Jan, Feb, and just getting my head around this may be my last year and what do I need to do and to prepare for worst case scenario. So,
but then having said that, you've also said throughout the year that you've been very confident in your own ability that you can go on, and I think your footballs suggest that you can go on. What's holding things up? What's stopping Essendon from saying, "Yep, you're in next year"?
Oh, there's a number of things, but it's percentages are in my favour, so that's all I can say.
Okay, and is there a timeline on when you'll know? Because there could be two games left. There could be three games left. There could be a lot longer left. I would imagine that you would want to know before the end of round 23 to sort of...
No, it doesn't really bother me. I'm not one for farewells and congratulations and stuff. That doesn't really bother me. It's not going to define my career or my legacy whether I get a farewell game or I know before my last game or whatever. It's not that important to me.
Do you think
with respect?
Yep.
Do you think it's tied to the performance of the team, your future? If you don't make the finals, you're a worse chance. If you do, you're a better chance.
I don't think so. No.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
So the last thing, just to put a full stop to it, you're comfortable with where things are at, and if it does drag out to potentially October, you're comfortable with that. If it becomes a list management type situation.
Yeah. Well, I said it is what it is. It's the situation I'm in. It's the reality of being 33-year-old. And most of us have to go through it. Things pan out differently. This situation is kind of circumstantial in terms of players retiring their own off their own bat, or you get to my situation or Joey's situation last year, Montagna. That is, it's all kind of different. It just plays out differently, and it is what it is.
Have you talked to Joey or Rui about what they went through last year?
Well, I know what they went through.
Yeah.
So not directly about my current situation, what they went through. We had already talked about that early, before the year started and how it all panned out.
Just for your point of view with Essendon and what they have done now for the back two-thirds of the season, it is setting up for a potential good period of time for the football club.
Yeah, no doubt.
So from Brendan's point of view, he's going, well, geez, I want to be part of this. But then there's the youngsters coming through and trade targets and all that sort of stuff. As a manager, how do you, not that you specifically are with Brendan, how do you deal with your players in those sort of situations?
Facts. That's the most important, particularly with an older player. They're most are mature enough to be able to have those conversations. And whether that's one with the management and then in Brendan's case the football club involved, that's what you need. They need to hear facts. They don't need to hear, they don't need lip service. They need to completely understand what's going on. And I think in this case, by what Brendan's saying, he's quite comfortable with that situation, whereas others, I think the lip service is the problem, because then you have an older player that's given great service to a football club walking around the club wondering, and it's just not healthy.
Yeah, I admire the way BJ's handling all this, because I know if I was in his situation, I'd be going, I want to know. Mm. Please, surely I've done well enough to go on. So I think
that's where transparency is important, and honesty, and that's where we're at. I think it goes pear shaped when there's a lack of communication or there's lack of transparency and the lip service and all that kind of stuff, and then there's a surprise or surprises that pop up, but we're all on the same page. So whether I agree with it or not, I've got my head around that it's reality of the situation and the position I'm in.
There is a perception, Rammer, outside of Brendan's situation specifically, that birth certificates are becoming more important to clubs in terms of decision-making as opposed to facts and performance. Is that reality? That's certainly a perception.
Oh, I think that's been a perception for a long time. I think when a guy gets, particularly probably to 32, for whatever reason, that just becomes front of mind for most people. And I think at times clubs forget about actually how the player's performing.
Yeah.
And if they're actually providing what's required, because it's the old one, oh, he's an older player, we need to bring younger players into the team. But I'm a firm believer that's okay. That's okay to bring younger players into the team if they earn it. Because what clubs do, they get into this vicious cycle of just giving these young kids games when, one, they're not ready, two, they haven't earned it, so they just stay in this vicious cycle of mediocrity.
And I think it's kind of changing a bit, Half, because if you think of what Luke Hodge has done at Brisbane, this almost obsession around Jared McVeigh and what he can offer, whether it be at Sydney or somewhere else, that on-field leadership. You know, BJ didn't play hardly any game on Friday night, but he still had a big impact on the way the game was played from an Essendon perspective because of his coaching ability. So,
Jake Stringer says that.
If I'm Essendon, you know, it might not be that Brennan Manley play 14 or 16 games next year, but it's what he can do during the week, what he can almost be a conduit between the coaches and the players. He's still a very valuable player.
Great to have Scotty Gallen with us from the Herald Sun with all the latest news in the world of footy. He's the best at it, and he joins us again, a big part of our Breakfast Club team. Good morning, Scotland. Good
morning, Daniel. Now, I've got a couple of things for you.
Righto, hit me early.
This would be awesome.
100 million Powerball. 100.
Tonight. I might buy a ticket tonight.
I think it's time to dust off the wallet. 100 million, Adam.
That's a lot of money.
I wouldn't be in here next Tuesday.
See, that's where you're different.
I would.
No. Oh, no. How do you say I wouldn't shake your head in that direction?
I would be in.
No way. I would just...
Whitey and I would
walk
be
nude around the office and do all sorts of things you're not supposed to do and go, it's over.
I reckon you could spend 100 mil in a month.
I'd have
Who?
A crack.
Everyone Scotty. or just Scotty?
Yeah, just Scotty.
My mates or pretend mates would get a lot of love. There'd be boats.
What's your parties? What's your horse racing trip that you're going at the end of the year? Where do you go to?
Horse racing
Didn't
trip?
Didn't you go last year to some race meeting, country racing meeting?
Yeah, I'm a regular. Oh, no.
You went on the bus. You went on the bus last year.
He's more a harness racing man these days. That's where his horse seems to be. He's got wheels on it.
There'd be a lot of horses. Anyway.
He's got wheels, his horse.
Powerball. What else have I got for you? Madonna's 60. How's that make you feel?
She's 60.
Yeah. That's a good innings.
Bloody hell.
You know this is a sports show, don't you?
No, I bring... Well, it's
I'm surprised that Andrew Mays
racing,
hasn't
sport,
sort of put some bachelor sort of stuff on.
Well, no. I was going to mention...
Yeah, the bachelor on the
it
breakfast
started.
Bite. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's a sackable offence, by the way, putting the bachelor edits and audio on the breakfast
Banned
bite. That's a sackable offence.
Did you watch?
Reprimand.
I was forced to see a little bit of it.
I kid.
Well, it's got a sporting tinge because it's Nick Cummins, the
He didn't
honey
have
badger.
A TV for the last 6 years. No TV.
Joe Watson type activity.
For the honey
David
badger.
Hill, no TV.
So I worry
that
about
doesn't
that.
That surprise me.
That's up there with drinking. Not there's anything not with not drinking,
yeah,
but it
right.
still makes me think, okay, there's something going on here. No TV.
He's a unique man, the honey badger.
I'm not, okay.
Don't tell me you won't be sitting down.
No. It was on as I was striding through and went, oh, is that the best 24 they can fight? But anyway, we'll move on. It's all good. Now, I've been waiting since Tuesday.
Yes. Oh, good. I'm glad
the
you're
phone,
here.
You know how we're a team in here, Daniel?
I thought we were all about team. Until the break.
And if your phone rings from the bat phone from our man out the back, generally, you're around the breakfast table with the wife and kids, you probably answer it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
A. Mays, urgent, please ring.
Yep.
There was no urgent in the message.
You were watching the phone and giggling, going, there's no way I'm picking this up.
No.
How do you
true.
Feel? Have you apologised?
No.
To the listeners?
Nope.
Because Daniel Menzel was hot topic
if you
on
look,
Tuesday.
I replied to Andrew Mays at, I think, about 8:50.
Oh, when you got out of bed?
Dropped the kids off at school like I usually do on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday.
Same between
like
the hours of
6 man.
And 8:30. You didn't have 5
my
minutes.
My focus is on my family.
Oh, my God. I've heard it all.
That's where my focus lies.
This is official warning stuff.
Yeah.
So I have RSN on the background, but my focus is on my family.
So they heard the call out on air to say, I will get Rammer because he's part of the team.
Well, unlike you,
he'll ring in. He's part of the team.
I don't have my phone attached to my hand.
Come off it.
Oh, this is... You're a manager of the Stars. You get calls about blokes drunk locked up all the time.
Danny Cipriani style.
Yes.
I got charged overnight.
Anyway, at least now it's 3 days old, but So when's he going to St Kilda?
Thank you, Scotland. I've been waiting to ask that all morning.
Adam? Do you want me to answer now?
The platform's yours.
Is that a question or a statement?
BJ's out of the hot seat and Rammer's in it.
It's definitely a question. When is he going to St Kilda? It's a question.
No, I don't necessarily think he is going to St Kilda or any other club. He's staying at Geelong.
Has St Kilda spoken to you about Daniel Menzel?
St Kilda have spoken to me about Daniel and many other
players. Have they offered a multiple-year deal?
No.
Have they offered more money than he's on at Geelong?
No. They haven't offered a deal.
How do you feel about lying to the listeners?
Look, if you want me to lie, I will lie.
But you do it all the time.
But St Kilda have not offered Daniel Menzel a contract.
How are your talks with Geelong progressing?
Fine.
Have they offered a multiple-year deal?
No.
Do we keep going like this, Daniel, or do we just say...
This is good. This is like fast...
I know.
Fast money.
Fast money.
Folk of the solar century. Righto. Another fast money question. Have you met with them more than once or talked to them more than once?
Have I?
Yeah, about Daniel Menzel.
No.
Just the one meeting. Mm. Just the one chat.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, jump in.
Please.
Would Daniel Menzel like to stay at Geelong?
Yes, he would.
Do you think at this stage that's more likely than not that he will stay at Geelong, or do you think that it's got to a point where he's got to look at his options?
No, I think it's more likely still that he'll stay at his club, but at the same time, and this is no different to last year, absolutely no different to last year, if there's a multi-year offer for Daniel at another football club, he has to consider it. Has to consider it. I can't be any more clear than that.
No, that's fair. Have Geelong historically only offered one for Daniel? Is there a sense they might be more excited about giving two, given what he's brought in the last 18 months?
No idea.
Okay.
It is different than last year, Rammer, because there's a suitor.
Yes.
There seems to be a suitor this year.
Well, not just one.
Oh, hey.
He's gone from
poorhouse to penthouse.
Look, there's probably a moment in most players' career where people see what they actually can do rather than what they can't do. And I think clearly with Daniel that's happened. When he was playing at the start of the season, he was obviously playing very, very good football and kicking a lot of goals. When he went out of the team,
they poisoned him too. They owe him that.
You said that, not me, Scotty.
Well, they did.
You said that. When he went out of the team, it's obviously, gee, we need him back in our team because he is so important to our scoreboard. So, look, it's very... Daniel's had a very unique career and it's been obviously well documented. So, he's into the team now. He's playing good. I'm talking with Geelong. As every other of my clients and TLA's clients, we talk to football clubs every single day about different players.
We need a list of Adam's clients so we can do this every week.
Absolutely.
I'm happy to go through this every week because
money's good.
unlike in your area of expertise.
Oh, here we go. Bashing journalists.
I'm happy to tell the truth and not make up things.
Oh, now.
If you want, look.
When you sign on to be a player agent, there's a clause that says you will lie at all times if you have to.
Maybe I'm different.
Oh. All right, we go from the fast money to pick of the board. Where do we go next?
Yeah, well, Delvine's just about to come out and just do something for us. By the way, a bit of feedback. Willie Hernan's selection in the early mail has been scratched.
Perfect.
He's having a mare.
Poor old Willie's having a mare. Now, Alan Richardson under pressure. Nick Rewalt was on 360 last night on Fox Footy. I want to listen to Nick about Alan Richardson, please.
It's a difficult question to answer without being there every week. I mean, the results so far this year would suggest that he's under pressure, and I think he understands that, and I think the football club are aware of that. That's what the review really has been about, and whether the landscape will change based on what happens over the next 2 weeks, only the club can answer that. But up until this point, Simon Lethlean's been pretty resolute that Richo is the right man, and he's going to be safe. So until we hear otherwise, we have to assume that that's the case.
That was the former skipper, former champ from the Saints, Nick Rewalt on 360 last night. Now, some of Lethlean's comments in the last couple of weeks have been emphatic that he will stay and be a part of the club next season, and they will support him with a new coaching structure and support mechanism. That being said, performance is still performance, and the perception of what's happening to Kilda, as articulated beautifully by Roo last night, is that there's a hell of a lot of work to do.
Yes.
Is there any possibility with the board upheaval that looks like it might be coming as well that Alan won't be there? any possibility, Scotty, from what you're hearing with your sources?
200 point losses, maybe. I mean, the problem is Lethlean's the new kid on the block there. He's getting his power base. It would be a pretty big turnaround for him to sack him after how strong he's come out.
Yep.
The board thing's going to take a little bit of time. I mean, the president, Peter Sumner, the Jim Watts, the former CEO, there's a lot of push to get him in. That'll take a little bit of time. So, look, you don't want 220 goal losses to finish a year. I mean, that changes ballparks. I don't care who you are.
Touch base with Lockie Henderson down at the Cattery, because at the moment, as we speak, leading into round 22, the Cats are outside the eight, can you believe? They've got Fremantle at GMHBA Stadium on Saturday afternoon to get themselves back in the hunt. Lockie Henderson's going to be a big part of that. Lockie, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
No worries, buddy. What's happened at the Cats in the last little while? I couldn't have envisaged, I don't think, that you'd be out of the eight with two rounds to go. What's gone wrong?
Look, I think it's been a bit of one of those years. I think the competition's very, very even, and you've got to be your best each week, and we sure haven't been every week. So I think it's pretty much as simple as that. I think you've still got a few teams behind for trying to make the eight, a few teams trying to stay in there. So very even comp, and it's what people want to see. So it's good footy, and it makes it for an interesting last couple of rounds.
We heard from the coach after the game, Chris Scott, about he's got an eye on the future, and it's probably difficult as a player to do it. But are you doing the calculations to work out what has to happen for you to be a part of September?
I think you're lying if you haven't had a quick look at it, but to be honest, I haven't looked as much this week as I have the last few weeks. So I pretty much just left it now and just said, we know we're going to win the next two, and then just hope the rest falls our way. So, yeah, I think you're lying if you say you haven't, but I haven't looked at it as much as I think I would have in the past.
How different's your world been in the defensive half for the Cats this year? Because it's a very different looking at unit that you've got out there, a very young and experienced unit to a degree as well. How much more responsibility is added to your role this year?
I've hardly been out there, so it's been true. Different for me, but been watching, I think it hasn't changed a lot, to be honest. We've got obviously a few young guys down there, but the boys have been fantastic for most of the year, and I think if you said that you lost four out of the starting six, seven from last year, everyone would have jumped up in the air, but Blitzy going down there, Jack Henry, Aaron Black, all those boys going down there just were fantastic for all the year. So it hasn't changed much since I've been back there. It's just been a bit of getting used to a few different names that are going to yell out.
Hey, Lucky, you mentioned this, you haven't been out there much. How difficult was the start of the season for you? And did you feel like there was a time where you may have not got actually back and playing this season?
It was tough. It was a tough sort of start to the year and end of last year. It was very frustrating. There probably was a time that I didn't think I was going to fully get back right. But they're just the dark days you sort of have in rehab. And I think a lot of the guys that go through it have those days. You just got to work out be fully aware of those days and know that they're coming and not be too hard on yourself when you have them. But yeah, it was a tough one. It was a weird one because we always thought that surgeries were pretty minimal surgeries, but each time they just weren't working. So it wasn't like I thought I was done for 12, 16 weeks. I was always thought I was done for right, so that was the tough bit part, trying to get through it, but I'm through it now, which is good, and life goes on.
You mentioned Blitzavs. If you're an All-Australian select, I saw some stats where his games against the big names are pretty phenomenal the last couple of months. Is he in that sort of form?
Yeah, I think so for sure. It's hard to know throughout the whole year. Sort of we see what's happening lately, and I don't really look back too much, but I think definitely he's been fantastic for us. I touched on him just before, and him going back, and Harry and I have been there for most of the year, which usually is the one, the talls for the last couple of years. So, yeah, I think he's been fantastic. I think he definitely should be spoken in that category.
Now, your teammate Zach Tuohy's on a phenomenal streak. I think it's 139 games.
Is it?
He's whinging, He's whinging about a broken finger. How's he travelling?
Oh, I think he just whinges about stuff. So when he actually does get up and play, people just think he's really tough most of the time. So he usually goes through the Monday, Thursday whinges, and then gets in about midday today and starts not whinging about it anymore. I think he'll be fine as usual. But he'll be fine for Saturday.
Things have changed at the Western Bulldogs. I don't know what's happened at the Western Bulldogs, but something has changed and they are back on track. Probably a little bit late for a finals campaign, clearly, but it'd be music to the ears of the players and I'm sure brings a smile to their face. Caleb Daniels, one of the reasons they're back in really good form. He joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Caleb.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
We're very well, thank you. What's changed? Because you're playing really good footy again.
Yeah, we are. I think we're just probably starting to win some of those key factors in the games, I guess. Probably disposals and contested ball and different things like that. Being able to use the footy like we've sort of been training and like we've been wanting to do. But, yeah, we haven't probably pulled that together for four quarters just yet. So that's what we're striving to do this weekend.
It seems, and I'm only watching on the television, I've seen you guys live once in the last month. It seems that you're almost back to the similar style that brought you the premiership success in 2016. Is that about right? Did you probably get a little bit away from what brought you that success with the group that you have?
Yeah, maybe just a little bit. I mean, it's pretty hard to go into that, I guess, just purely because we've had such a massive turnover of players. Yep. And there's so many young players that are playing and they've been playing massive roles for us, which is great. It's great to have young blood come in and be able to hold their own, which is good. But, yeah, I suppose probably just that sort of risk-taking, using the footy and probably going through the corridor a little bit more. We've sort of gone back to doing that a little bit, and so far it's worked the treat.
Hey, Caleb, how do four players or three players in your team get 40 possessions in a game? how does that possibly happen?
You
I'm not too sure. I think we might have been waxing off each other a little bit. I remember Lockie gave me possession late, and I had no idea I was anywhere near getting that many posies, but I think there was a little bit of waxing between each other.
So 28 points down at half time. What's Bevo's message at half time? Is it just, look, guys, go out and attack the game, or was there a couple of clear areas that you guys needed to change?
No, there was a couple of clear areas. I mean, we were kicking long down the line, and we know North, they like to play that sort of brand of footy with their big tools, and they got a fairly sizable back end, and we didn't have that on the night, so we were just bombing it sort of in there, and I think Magic Dore was taking a fair few intercept marks, and Robbie Tarrant and Scott Thompson were having a good day as well, so we just had to nullify them a little bit and take the footy off the line and use it a little bit more cautiously and sparely, I guess, and start taking it on a bit. And yeah, we were able to do that. And the third quarter really showed and we came through.
Caleb, half talked about the Bulldogs season and how, you know, what we've seen, particularly the last couple of weeks. That's what we expect from the Dogs. I mean, you were the premiers less than 2 years ago. But I want to narrow it down a little bit more on yourself, because what we saw from you on the weekend is what we were seeing from you in the premiership year a lot more. What happened with yourself?
In terms of form?
Yeah, like, I mean, what, as I said, you haven't been playing as well, you know, recently, when I say recently, earlier this year, to what you have been in the last few weeks.
Yeah, that's definitely right. I mean, I probably lacked that ball use, I guess. I was turning the footy over a little bit for a fair portion of the year, I guess, and that doesn't help when you know, one of the sort of high half forwards getting up the ground and trying to energise that ball and I don't know, connect inside 50 and help our forwards out and get a score on the board. So if you turn the footy over, it's not great for the team. So, yeah, I guess I was playing a little bit of a different role. I was playing probably more permanent forward and not getting too much midfield time. So that changed a little bit, and I was on the weekend and the week before, I was able to use the footy a fair bit better and actually hit my targets, which helps a fair bit.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, how do you fix that? Because that is one of your great skills, and we saw that on Saturday night, you know, that 45-degree daring kick back into the corridor and opening the game up for your teammates with the way you use the ball. Is it the way you train? Is it going back to the VFL and getting plenty of the footy and getting your confidence back that way? How does it click back into gear?
Yeah, I think it's a massive confidence thing. I didn't go back down to the VFL. I was just able to probably get my hands on it a little bit in training and get, I don't know, get my head from the coaches, and they gave me extreme confidence to play and back my instincts and use the footy if I see it. So they've just given me that confidence, and I've yeah, been training pretty hard, just trying to rectify, I guess, earlier in the year.
Brandon Ellis knows that well and truly from the Tigers. They've got a big game, of course, Friday night. We spoke to BJ about it before, but to continue their momentum into round 22. Brandon, good morning.
How are we, guys?
Going very well. Thank you, man. Nice to have you on board. Now, the Tigers, last month, has been you've been stretched a bit. The Giants got a hold of you in a tight one. The Pies pushed you for three quarters. The Cats nearly got you at the MCG. Is this good for you going into September, do you think, having this sort of spate of games where you have to really work and earn the win?
Yeah, I think it definitely is, especially a crunch time of the year. With a couple of games to go, we've got another tough one tomorrow night in the Bombers. They're in good form at the moment. But, yeah, we've had a pretty tough run the second half of the year. Had GWS up there, then we had the Pies who, you know, really pushed us, and then we had Geelong as well who tested us. So, it's good to have those big games come this time of the year. Just another one tomorrow night to add to that. And then obviously the Doggies in round 22, so it doesn't get any easier, but we're looking forward to it and we can't wait for the challenge.
And I'm intrigued as to the reviews and the way that Damien and the coaching staff review those games with you as a team, and to whether or not the level of intensity goes up when it is a bit tighter, or is it the same every week?
It just depends what sort of game it is. If it's a real in-tight contested game like it was against Geelong, obviously the pressure is up because the ball's in dispute a lot more, and it's a lot more of a contested game. Whereas on the weekend, it's probably a bit more free-flowing. It was pretty contested up there in the Gold Coast because it's a pretty small ground. But it just sort of depends what sort of game you got and what sort of weather conditions there is and how the other team plays. Sort of depends on what sort of game we play.
Hey, how significant has Koch been to your career, Brandon? Obviously, he extended his contract yesterday. You're living with him at the moment. How significant has he been for your development?
Yeah, he's been fantastic, Kochi. He sort of took me under his wing when I first got to the club. We've become really good mates since. He's taken me under his wing. He's just shown me the ropes. And, it's no wonder why he's the captain of our footy club and why he's such a fantastic leader. He's been fantastic for my development. And, it's awesome that he's been able to extend his contract. And I think he'll be 32 when it's up. So he's going to be nice and old. But, he's been awesome for me. And, I can't thank him enough.
We've been talking a lot about your team, Brandon, over the last few weeks about how your sort of mental state is, because you know that finals is just around the corner, that you've shored up that top two spot. And you're kind of waiting to get back to where you were last year. How hard is it to remain focused when you know where things are at and you're controlling the situation?
It's not hard to stay focused. Just going into each week trying to improve on what we, weren't as good at the other week. So, each week sets different challenges and, each week, we go out there to try and put our best foot forward and try and play with that intensity and effort that's going to take us far and finer. So I guess each week sets new challenges and it's just no different to what we're going to face tomorrow night. So a few more games to go. You can sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel now, and we're looking forward to it.
Nice. I wonder what Lyndon Hall thinks about the desserts. She's been good enough to join us in the studio. She's had a massive season at the London Diamond League meet. Not long ago, she broke the mile record for Australia, and she's back with us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Lyndon.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Are you a dessert person just while we're there?
I'm very partial to a dessert. Yeah, definitely.
What's your favourite?
Probably just classic chocolate. It's a good go-to.
Can't go wrong. Yeah. Can't go wrong. Now, you are taking all before you in the world of athletics at the moment. Your last period of time has been unbelievable. I mentioned the London Diamond League meet where you won you broke the Australian mile record. You got the 1500 metre record as well. You're flying. What's the difference? How come you've developed so quickly in the last 12 months or so?
Oh, a bit cliche, but probably just more consistency, more experience, and getting some good confidence to be able to race with the top girls rather than, just being happy to be there, happy to kind of get more amongst it and, be competitive in races and get dragged through and, it seems to come out with the results.
So you're learning off when you're racing at the Diamond League meets and the Commonwealth Games, of course. I think you're fourth in the final there of the, the 1500. You're racing against the best. Do you analyse, when you review your performances, do you analyse what they do as well, or is it just what you do?
I try to look more at what I did because that's all I can control, but you do kind of learn a little bit about other girls because you're going to race them again, and you know who likes to go hard early, who likes to sit back, who you need to watch out for in the last 200 and things like that. So you I think without trying too hard, you do kind of pay attention to those things. But in terms of preparing for the next one, I sort of worry more about myself.
And those little benchmarks of Australian records, do you chase them? Are they things on your wall at home or on your toilet door, or as people seem to have these days with their goals?
Yeah, the 1500 record's definitely been sort of on my mind for a while, probably since 2016, when I got pretty close and really surprised myself in the lead up to Rio, and sort of thought it was a bit of a formality that I'd be able to run quicker again. It took me 2 whole years to get there, which I think probably made it more valuable because I had to work a lot harder for it. And I knew it was fast, but I think I had such a good year in 2016. I was like, oh, I'm chuffing time off like crazy here. It's going to be easy. Well, not quite easy, but I thought it would come quicker. So it was sort of a long 2 years, and having to chase it probably made it a bit sweeter.
Now, Lyndon, you did the college thing in America.
Yeah.
First of all, is it like the movies and they all go crazy?
Somehow that's the second time I've been asked that this morning, and it's only 8:30.
Love it.
But yeah, I went to Florida State Uni, go Noles, and we very much a big football school, big southern school. You got your big frat houses, sorority houses, and it probably was very much like a movie where I went, yeah. If you really wanted to create one, you could.
That's fantastic.
I like that. But that system, explain why it was good for you, your career, and why you did it and how you progressed.
I think it was a really good bridging year between juniors in Australia and seniors. I think people come out of juniors and, you know, you've been sort of a big fish, you've won nationals, you've, you know, done all these things, and then you go into seniors and you're like, oh, this is hard, and you don't really get the recognition that, you know, you're like, oh, I made a final at nationals, that's awesome. But it's not, you know, you're not winning medals anymore, and it gets a bit harder, and you have to support yourself a lot as well. So, you know, there's a lot of cost and time involved, and I was studying full time across the road at Melbourne Uni, and I was trying to work and trying to run, and it was hard to keep up with. And so college presented an opportunity to tie that all into a neat little bundle, and they paid for everything. And
great system.
You know, my classes worked around going to training and competition. If I missed a test, you know, the uni got me out of it. When I was at uni here, it was, you know, 5 weeks of paperwork to move a quiz to go to nationals. So definitely removed all those stresses and got to race really good meets and top girls and things, you know, week in, week out when you wanted to.
So you're jumping on a plane this afternoon to go back overseas, obviously.
Yep.
So how many races have you got coming up now?
Probably have 3 to 4 races left in the season. So the biggest one of this trip will be the Continental Cup, which is first weekend of September. So we'll run for Asia Pacific team. So I think that team's due to be announced in the next couple of days.
So as a 1500 metre runner, obviously that's a very unique distance and very painful distance. How many races can you have a year for peak performance?
You can probably run a lot of 15s. It doesn't, you know, it's not like running a marathon where you need 2 weeks off to recover. Mm. I think everyone varies a little bit. I've probably run over 10, 1500s this year by the time I've run the Australian season, Com Games, and then gone over to Europe. Been lucky enough to be able to get starts in the bigger races and run most of the Diamond Leagues this year. So depending on what results you got on the board, depends where you get in, and it probably dictates a bit how many times you race. You know, if the opportunity's there, I love to race it. I don't like to say no.
Now, Caster Semenya, she's a controversial figure in our sport. What's it like racing? She's an amazing athlete. Where do you sit, and what's it been like even, like, you know, being on the start line with her?
Yeah, so this year's sort of really the first time she's moved up to the 1500 so that we've had to actually race. Definitely makes me feel small. She's a very, very tall figure. Not that I'm that tall, but it's probably not hard to do. So I guess Commonwealth Games, she really dictated how I ran my race because I saw her as the biggest threat, and obviously she ended up winning the race. Yeah, I sort of planned my race around her a little bit, but once I actually got into the race, I kind of forgot about her until the last 200 when she sped past me, and I was like, oh, I forgot about you. So she's obviously doing incredible things over the 8 and 15 now, which is, you know, I probably would have preferred her to stay in the 800 and not have to worry about her. I've got enough girls to race.
So when you're running 1,500 metres, I mean, it's one of the. There gets a gap where you just run as fast as you can for 1,500 metres. Are you running at 80% and then you go to 100% for the last 200 How do you work out your speeds?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's many points where you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of the aim, and that's probably a good thing. Usually in the bigger meets, we'll have pacemakers go through the first 800 or 1K. So you kind of just jump on the back and try and hang on is often my tactic. Generally a little bit of cat and mouse and not wanting to you know, do all the work at the front. You don't want, you know, if it's windy, you don't want to cop that wind. You don't want to be the one sort of waiting to be pounced on that everyone's going to swamp you at the end.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.